também.
You know it?
You know it?
No, no.
Okay.
As you get out of the lift, you'll see there's a bottom on the wall. There's a crater right over there.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Yes.
Good morning, everyone. I guess we should commence with our meeting mainly because the time is against us. We are expected to somewhere in towards the end of September, October, to be considering also the annual report. And for us to meet that timeline, we have to make sure that we fast track things. We are glad that we can do this, we can combine the two. And I hope that members did go through the documents so that they have a clear understanding of what's going on. This is unusual to consider the two at the same time, but we're going to be starting with a strategic plan so that we get a sense of what's going on. We did get a presentation, even though it was informal, and that presentation had not even gone to the minister by then. We did so for the purposes of acquainting ourselves with issues confronting the Competition Commission so that we can have an idea of what the Competition Commission is all about. We had meetings afterwards wherein the Commission reported to us on various aspects or areas of their work, and we're expecting that to continue. We will be handing over to the Commissioner Ramborod so that he can be able to brief us, but before we do so, we are going to give Ariko an opportunity to give us just to brief us on who is here, who's not here, and we'll decide whether we form a quorum or not. for this meeting, because we do need a quorum for this meeting.
Thank you, Chairperson. We've received three apologies from Dr. Wang, who's in China, Dr. Mabasa, who's still off sick, and the Honorable Polomisa as well. Mrs. Bengu is attending the Women's Summit, but she will be coming later today. So we do form a quorum, Chair, to continue.
You wanted to say something about our request to the House Chair around the women's non-attendance of our women folk in the committee of that forum so that it can be taken. It can be minuted, okay.
Yeah, House Chairperson approved that we can continue with our meeting. Initially, he requested that we postpone the meetings of this morning, the morning slot, but after inquiries with the Office of the House Chairperson, the House Chair indicated that we can continue with our meeting this morning, Chair.
Okay. So no member must give an excuse that they were in the women's meeting, because we did request the permission for that. And the whip responsible must ensure that that is corrected, actually. In as far as the quorum is concerned?
We need 7 members to form a quorum, Chair. As I indicated, Ms. Bengu will be coming around. Yeah. So we can continue, Chair.
Thanks for this, for that. This is so uncomfortable. Okay. May we, without a waste of time, welcome everyone here, and I know we have the media here, we have representatives from the Competition Commission and the Competition Tribunal. You're welcome. And over to you, Mr. Rambarup.
Thank you very much, Chair. Honorable members, good morning. As the Chair pointed out, I have made a very similar presentation that I'm going to make today at an earlier time. It was at a time when our report wasn't actually kind of processed through the Economic Development Department. One of the difficulties of doing this is kind of fitting everything in the time of the report. As you see, when we do the quarterly report, things have happened subsequent to that, and it's going to be hard to always fit things in, tell you the story just within the period within which we're reporting. So just for you to know that. Honorable members, our strategic plan for 2010-2013 was drawn up as part of a 3-year cycle of a detailed strategic planning which the organization has. So the previous detailed strategic plan we had for the previous period was 2006-2009. Every 3 years we go away and come up with a very detailed plan for the following 3 years. And this plan is a plan that's gone through that detailed process. But before I get to it, it might be useful just to remind everybody on what the mandate of the Competition Commission is. The Competition Commission works under the authority of the Competition Act, and we have 3 main areas of activity. The first is to prevent further concentration in the economy through merger control. So all mergers above a certain threshold get notified to us, and we must decide on whether to approve them or not. In the case of large mergers, we make recommendations to the Competition Tribunal that takes the final decision. We are responsible for approving intermediate mergers, and if parties wish to appeal our decision, they can take it to the Competition Tribunal. And small mergers, there isn't compulsory notification, but we can call for them to be notified and consider them. The second area for work is the prosecution of anti-competitive business behavior. There's 3 categories that the Act sets out of the kinds of behavior we must prohibit. This occurs after we investigate our case and prepare prosecution, which we take in the first instance to the Competition And the three areas are, in the language of the Act, horizontal restrictive practices, and these are relationships between competitors, collusive relationships within between competitors, and this is where we use the word cartels, and bid rigging also forms part of horizontal restrictive practices. The second category is vertical restrictive practices. These are relationships between a company and either its supplier or customer that may be exclusionary in some way or exploitative in some way, where the one area that we have a fair number of cases on is in resale price maintenance. The third area of anti-competitive behavior is the abuse of dominance. This is where a firm owns a very large market share in a particular market, and certain behaviors of a dominant firm are explicitly prohibited by the Act, amongst them excessive pricing, exclusionary conduct, and price discrimination. The third area of our mandate is to be involved in advocacy work. This is not enforcement, this is not the stick, as it were. This is kind of persuading people to behave in pro-competitive ways. This is where we kind of deal with the relationship between regulation and competition, where we advocate for pro-competitive regulations, pro-competitive legislation and policy from in government, and pro-competitive behavior and practices and governance in private firms. So this is just all the areas of work that we're involved in terms of the Competition Act. Just very briefly, I mentioned that the current plan went through a very detailed process, and what we did here, our current plans, how we put it together, we reviewed the previous strategic plan, we looked at changes in our environment, we got inputs from management and from staff in the organization. We did stakeholder consultations. We had, for example, the current minister of trade and industry attend part of our strategic planning session and gave input, and we've drawn up from it an implementation strategy. Now, this slide shows us the key objectives of our previous strategic plan, not our current one. This is the 2006-2009 plan. Just to give you some context, in that period, staff morale was a big issue. Aligning structure to work processes was something we worked on. We began working on looking at how we create better information and knowledge flow in the organization and to improve our expertise. And we developed an approach to how we would prioritize our sectors and cases, and we did some kind of conceptual work around what we needed to do in advocacy and communication. So that was the previous period. And then, importantly, in coming up with, that was, you know, the first point I made is we took into account what our previous plan said to develop our current plan. We also look at our operating environment, and some very big things were happening in that environment, both externally and internally, at the time that we drew up this plan about a year ago. There was, of course, the global economic crisis, which was affecting all parts of the economy, and something we needed to take into account, particularly since it affects the number of mergers that get notified, and because in the crisis there was a tendency for people to cut corners in terms of competition law. Also, in the external environment, there was a strong demand for us, for all agencies to build all government agencies to build a savings culture, to kind of spend more wisely. We also had, in that period, amendments to the Competition Act being mooted and increasing demands on the organization from our stakeholders. As we became more successful and more well-known, stakeholders began making more and more demands on us and what we should be or could be doing. Internally in the organization, we found that we needed more resources to deal with the increasing number of cases and to give better and more meaningful effect to our strategic priorities. What was happening in the organization is we needed to have better management, particularly at the middle, the management layer, because more and more of the work and decision making was being devolved to lower levels of the organization. All of this required very structured change management in the organization, and we needed to even further improve and strengthen our knowledge management base and the way we dealt with information. One of the things we've had to do in revising this business plan from the time we drew it up is to ensure that the plan is aligned with the strategy of the Economic Development Department and Ministry. And just to kind of flag how that occurs, on this slide on the left-hand side are all the outputs expected by outcome 4 of the EDD's plan. And the Commission contributes in a number of ways to each one of these outputs. In terms of obstacles to growth, I think we are a source of important information to EDD on how anti-competitive behavior retards growth in different areas. With respect to labor absorbing growth, the Commission, one of the criteria it uses in prioritizing cases is that we need to deal with those markets that are inputs into the manufacturing sector, and the manufacturing sector, of course, is the more labor-absorbing sector in the economy, and by decreasing input costs, for example, through our cases relating to chemicals, steel, and plastic, we unblock that, and we unblock the obstacles to developing a labor-absorbing manufacturing sector. With respect to reducing youth unemployment, insofar as we can, we place conditions on mergers to limit job losses where that is appropriate, but also the Commission as an organization in and of itself offers employment opportunities to youth through the Commission's graduate trainee program, one of our more successful programs where we in fact grow our own people. You know, a lot of these graduate trainees end up working in the organization, and some of them currently have very senior positions in the organization. With respect to raising our competitiveness, we do a lot of work in both terms of our enforcement and advocacy to change business culture and to promote local rivalry between the firms. And it's only if firms are subject to the discipline of local competition that they're likely to become more globally competitive. It's very unlikely that a firm that does not have local competition becomes globally competitive, because that discipline is learned in your local economy. With respect to costs in the economy, we've prioritized cases that raise the cost to the end consumer, if you think of our food cases, and that raise the cost to businesses. So, for example, banking and telecommunications, in both areas we have advocacy and enforcement activity. We have also advocated for pro-competitive regulatory processes that reduce costs, and have been involved in all the kind of government processes at an earlier period run from the president's office to look at how you know, the economy, the regulatory processes can be less onerous on businesses. With respect to the support of small businesses and cooperatives, I think it goes without saying that insofar as we're breaking up cartels, or insofar as we are addressing the behaviors of dominant firms and stopping anti-competitive behavior of dominant firms, we're opening up these markets so that new businesses can enter and grow in them. We're breaking the stranglehold, if you like, that either abusive firms or cartels have in particular markets, and this kind of will allow new entrants to enter into those markets. And then finally, with respect to the expansion of the public works program, one of our big priority areas has been the construction sector. And here we've looked at two things, essentially. One is building materials, the cost of building materials, but also we've had a number of cases around bid rigging, where companies that are tendering for government work rig the bids between themselves rather than tendering competitively. And by getting rid of that kind of behavior, the cost to government will to come down. We've also had a big project that's currently running on advocating policy changes that enable the prevention and detection of bid rigging by all government departments. Okay, so our strategic priorities then for this year can be divided into three categories. The first is to achieve demonstrable outcomes in the economy. And here we're looking at kind of orientating this organization to have greater impact in terms of its work. We must be able to prioritize our work continuously and ensure that the kinds of cases we're selecting are the ones that have a meaningful impact. And this requires for us to kind of work in a particular way. We will develop guidelines for how the organization will prioritize, because this is something we must do quite transparently. We'll develop methodologies on how we go about assessing the impact of our work. Part of this is about how we also select and undertake market inquiries, which is a new provision that the Competition Amendment Act gives the Commission. So that's an area about ensuring we have greater impact. This of course, is in response to a number of comments and a number of very fair criticisms and comments of the competition authorities. They're saying, look, you're doing all this work, you're finding people, but what are the bottom line, end of the day, outcomes and impact you have on everybody? And this is a very difficult thing for an agency like ours to measure, but I think it's something that we want to infuse in the consciousness of the organization, that we're just not working to find people. We want to make a meaningful impact at the end of the day on end consumers, and we must work in a particular way to achieve that, and we must be able to measure that at the end of the day. The second strategic goal is around increased competitive environment for economic activity, but essentially it's about creating an enabling economic environment for competition to occur, for there to be high levels of competition and competitive behavior by firms. And here, this entails a lot of advocacy work where we engage with stakeholders around the kinds of policies government, for example, comes up with, must be pro-competitive. And so it's about dialogue and advocacy with those people who have the power of creating this enabling environment, and this will involve improving our communication with sector-specific regulators and consolidating our partnerships with other law enforcement agencies. And the third strategic goal is about is now more organizational. What are we going to do within the organization to make this organization a high-performance organization? And the sub-objectives here is about strengthening our management capacities to manage the caseload we have, implementing a knowledge management system within the organization, dealing with issues of staff retention and succession planning, and ensuring that the organization, putting into place ways in which the organization takes better decisions, improving decision-making in the organization. Just a little bit more about each of these goals, to take them one by one. With respect to demonstrable outcomes, it's clear that with the limited resources we have, prioritization becomes a very important thing. We have to continuously prioritize. we have to target sectors and cases that have a higher impact at the end of the day on the economy. And as I pointed out earlier, we're developing a framework through which we do that, and how and the way, and which includes the way we'll go about selecting market inquiries. With respect to competitive environment for economic activity, we've had dialogue and advocacy with a number of key stakeholders. We've ensured that all our plans and prioritization strategies incorporate government social and economic policy priorities so that we aligned with them. And essentially, this area of work involves influencing the behavior of all stakeholders, that's both policymakers and businesses, to behave in line with the Competition Act. And we've also began to talk with the NPA and SAPS to look at how we'll have, what kind of relationship we'll have with them in the implementation of the Competition Act, because the implementation of the amendments to the Competition Act, because that also has implications around criminalization. And then once again, in terms of high performance competition agency, this is about empowering leadership with management, with supportive management practices. We've got a huge project called the Management Development Program, the first part of which we've run last year, and the second part of which we've just begun this year again, where it's about improving the management skills of our middle-layer leadership. I've pointed out to this committee before that a lot of people who come to work at the Competition Commission are very, very good lawyers, are very, very good economists, but they don't have the experience of management. And they get promoted to management levels, and we need to ensure that they have the skills to do the management part of their job, because, of course, they are very good technical people. And this is a very big project we've had. We've designed a training program specific to this organization. There's about 15 people who go off for 4 weeks, 4 1-week blocks to learn, to be taught these skills, and then they plug it back into the organization under the supervision of their managers. Staff turnover is an issue that I think, you know, it's something an agency like us, ours, kind of naturally in some ways experience, and it's not as big an issue as it previously was, but it's something we need to ensure that we vigilant over. Finally, Chairperson, I need to this well, a few more slides, but the. This is the budget that we put forward together with our strategic plan for the 2010 to the 2013 period. This is for the current period going forward in 3 years. And one of the things we did here is when we devised our strategic plan, we did some very zero-based budgeting and zero-based identification of the kinds of resources we need. And so we put this entire plan together, and we asked for a government transfer of 187 million. When the NTEF for the current period was approved, the budget for us was approved with 63 million less than what we asked for. Okay, 63.69 million. So we have a situation now where the plans we have, in order to implement the plans that we have, we need 187 million. But we don't have all of it. So we can't implement all of the plans. There's the need in the organization for us to cut out certain activities, 7 million rands worth of activities need to be cut out. And we have constantly kept in touch with, a lot of this was happening in the period also where there was a transition with us reporting to DTR on the one hand and then EDD on the other. So this was a kind of difficult administrative period as well in terms of dealing with the respective government departments. And this has quite frankly put an enormous amount of pressure on the organization, because you can imagine that a lot of management time gets now spent on what do we cut, where do we cut, how do we ensure that we kind of don't overspend at the end of the year. And you'll see, for example, when we do our quarterly report, that a lot of the activities we've cut back on, we haven't proceeded on it with this uncertainty about whether we'll get the money or not. There is a lot of political will for us to get the money from the EDD. Both the minister and the department supports us getting this money. And they've kind of been quite helpful in getting us to make the motivation around it. But just last week, we were told that, look, you know, essentially what we want here is for us to get additional money in the current year, which is a really difficult thing to do administratively if you have to go through all the processes around how the MTEF is decided. For the following years, it's probably easier to kind of motivate for it. And I think that these decisions are going to be taken by the end of the month as to whether we do get the additional money or not. But we have been advised by the CFO and DG of EDG that, look, 63.7 million rand is probably too much for you to get in one go. Perhaps you can kind of cut that amount down to what your bare essentials are, what you really, really must have. And so we've put in our second submission, and that comes to about 30 million additional funds we're asking for the current year. Okay? And then the remainder, of course, is in the following year, and that's what we'll go through the normal MTEF process around that. Okay, well, that's the big news around us. The financing has been a problem. So just to talk about the implementation channels and challenges and summarize our strategic plan presentation, is that our implementation challenges include budgetary constraints, the uncertainty around the funding, what amount ultimately we'll get so we can fit our plans within the amount that's allocated to us. Capacity constraints. This relates to budgetary constraints, and this is about hiring staff, because a large amount of that money was about getting additional staff. We've got what appears to be a very mundane issue, but it's a very serious issue for us. We've got space constraints in the organization. If we expand the organization, we don't have offices for new people to sit in, and we kind of busy negotiating all of this with the UDI campus, because we're reorganizing space in that campus. So that's one of our big capacity constraints. We get the money to hire more staff, but no offices to seat them in. And what's also happening with the very dramatic and significant demand on our workload, which we look at when I do the quarterly report presentation, is we're finding that there's competing demands on just our normal day-to-day work of moving things in terms of the Competition Act. You know, things get reported, we've got to move on it. There's statutory deadlines that we've got to meet to complete mergers, complete investigations, and a lot of our work gets kind of just caught up in that, and there's less time for us to be thinking strategically, and our more strategic goals get shelved because they become the nice to do's rather than the have to do. You have to do, you know, something comes in terms of the Competition Act, you have to do it. A lot of our strategic goals is about improving the way we go about doing that, and that gets that doesn't kind of get as much attention because we're all caught up in just moving things. I mean, it's become increasingly difficult, for example, in organizations to call a meeting to discuss something strategic because everybody is involved in some case or the other, or involved in something that's kind of more pressing and immediate. And I think that one of the challenges that we are working on, in, you know, it's outside the period that I'm reporting on, even in the quarterly report, is for us to kind of seriously measure our performance and to just make the distinction in the organization between our outputs, which is the number of cases we have or the number of turnaround times, to the outcomes. In other words, what real effect is our work having to real life people in the world, in the economy. And that's it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Rambura. Any addition from any of your members? If they feel you've left out something important we should be aware of.
And Chair, I failed to introduce my team. Tembi Nkosi Bonakele is the Deputy Commissioner, and Anissa Kesley is acting as the Corporate Secretary.
Thank you very much. I don't know, because we haven't introduced ourselves, because we thought you knew us. We've been interacting with you for quite some time now. Yeah. Let's interact. I don't know whether Mr. Nkosi has anything to say. Nothing. And yourself, ma'am? Nothing. Thank you very much. We're pleased to have you. We were worried of the faces of the Competition Commission, quite male-dominated. And as I said earlier on, we feel refreshed by your faces, just your appearance. That's what men don't realize, what the women's warmth can do to the organizational environment. Just changes everything. By your mere presence. Okay, thank you very much. Colleagues, here is the presentation. Can we interact with it? I'll note you, first Dr. Rabi, Mem Line, Mr. Ngonyama, Mr. Ntuli, Mem Sotis, in that order, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, thank you for a very impressive submission. In your introduction, you say that within your operating environment, you'd like to see a number of amendments to the Competition Act. Is it possible to tell the committee which of those particular amendments will create a more efficient commission? We find ourselves I don't think we're out of the woods yet. Some people say we still are in a recession. I mean, many, many companies are battling to make ends meet. Almost a million South Africans lost their jobs the last year and so forth. And I'd like to have further clarity on, you said, sir, that your track record is very impressive. I mean, in the agri industry and if you look at the chemical industry and so forth, you have, quite a couple of these companies have been fined large sums and so forth. What is strange to me, Commissioner, is that you're battling for funds, and you're a source of revenue to government, so it doesn't make sense to me. I think it's important that we retain a balance between the amounts of money that you collect for the fiscus, and yet you are battling to meet your operating requirements. I would like to have views from that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Dr. Rabik. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Commissioner, thank you for this presentation that you gave us today. But mine is just a question for clarity. In slide 5, you are talking under internal operation environment. Bullet point 2, you are talking about the capacity building to empower middle management. And under your strategic priorities, strategic goal 3, you are also talking about the development and strengthening of the management. Does this mean that if you strengthen this management, the middle management, does this mean that your investigation time will be shorter and the time frame will also be shorter to conclude your cases? Thank you.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Let me start with the budget. Certainly, because we are not a finance and a committee, but would be interested in ensuring that Competition Commission actually functions effectively as it has done and until now. And therefore, my view, Chair, would be on this 30 million bare minimum that is being suggested by the Commission. If we are to actually take up this issue as a portfolio committee in ensuring or maybe giving support to Competition Commission, I definitely would believe that maybe we'd get some kind of an overall breakdown so that we know what we're talking about. And with regard to the 30 million, and therefore I want to concur with the fact that Competition Commission and until now deserves that kind of support from us as a portfolio committee. But for us to be very good advocates, we need more information, we need to be empowered. Moving to the operating environment, Chair, and the external, building a savings culture, and the point of clarity, and how does it impact on the operation of the goals of the commission? One would need maybe some expatiation on that issue, just that issue. And I have a number of questions on the alignment with EDD's outcome and the effective point of clarity, basically. Madam Chair, the first one is on labor absorbing growth, which is number two on the output. Prioritizing cases that raise input costs, chemicals, steel, plastics, and so on, steel in particular, within the context of what is happening in the country, especially with regard to the various companies, ArcelorMittal, and whether are we having anything around this, and with regard to the steel in particular.
Can you elaborate on that?
No, I'm in particular, it's the steel price that I'm worried about. The steel price, Madam Chair, and is it something that you are actually taking up? The other issue is the issue of number five, costs in the economy. Prioritizing cases that raise costs to the end consumers, food, business, and banking in particular, the bank charges issue. And would need to be maybe expatiated on and maybe adding on those two that are there, banking and telecommunication. I want to check if the question of the energy, the ESCOM, and are we not having a case there with regard to the charges, and if we talk about costs in the economy. And the last one, Chair, is the on these 7 points that we have here on outputs, are we not having maybe, is the question of the consumer protection in general not part and parcel of the outputs that would actually impact and on this issue? And by consumer protection, would refer to a number of cases with regard to the protection of consumers in general. Is it not relevant to these and the issue that I'm raising as maybe the eighth issue? Thank you, sir. And I want to definitely concur with my colleagues, Madam Chair. And it's a wonderful input. It's quite very clear for a simple person like me.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Mr. Mbonyama. Mr. Ntuli.
Thanks, Chairperson. I would also like to join my colleagues about the presentation. And on page 6, number 3, you are saying that you'll be reducing the youth unemployment. I want to check that, the impact of that or the target, because to say you're reducing unemployment and then it's an open-ended, maybe if you can tell us how many opportunities are going to be created or the target of that. This thing of resources, I've heard you saying that inadequate resources. We are used to this. You find that the agency or the department will say the resources are inadequate, but at the end of the test, you find that there is a surplus. There are a lot of money, I mean, coming back and unused. And then it becomes difficult for us to lobby for the funds, because the department will say they are looking for funds, but here is the rollover. If you can take us through that and assure us that it's not going to happen, because wherever you go, even if you go to the provinces, they'll say because there is no funds, there are no funds. But at the end of the year, they are all over, and it becomes a problem. If you can be able to help us on that one. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, and again, Julie. Those are the questions that you have from... Oh, sorry, ma'am. Ma'am, so did you. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Chair. On page 4, the last bullet on advocacy and communication. Which approach would you consider more effective for you to see your reach as many consumers as possible? And I think this one will talk to the concern you raised on page 7 that you cannot measure the impact on communities. I think the method of advocacy would talk to that. And on building a savings culture, it's really good news, but the same thing that Ms. Ntule just raised, that for as long as it's not compromising service delivery. I think it's about it. On capacity building on managers, if you can know how many managers and for training and for how long, but in future when you do oversight, you're able to say you said you'll do this within a certain sort of time, and within by then they shall have graduated from their training.
Thank you, Ma'am Sotetsi. Ma'am Beng, you're welcome. We have just got a presentation from the Competition Commission on the first plan for 2010 to 2013, the medium term. So this is an opportunity for questions. I'm aware that we have we have circulated this document to members on time, and if through your reading you have any questions that you'd want to ask now, you have the opportunity, Ma'am Bemu, unless you want us to give you more time to relax, it's fine. Thanks, ma'am. I also want to add a few. We normally are expecting to get certain documents coming together with this type of a presentation. For instance, there are questions that I think if we had received those documents, members wouldn't be asking as such. Like one, I was expecting to get, let me preface by saying we are aware that you are submitting threat claims to Parliament for the first time, and we understand the reason why. This is due to the enactment of or bringing into effect of the law that compels entities to submit directly to Parliament. We do understand that. That is, it is your first time, but documents such as your organogram such as you, because that would answer questions as to how many people do you have in your establishment, and how many are males, how many are females, whether you are meeting the employment equity requirements, you see, those type of issues. And your activity plan, your what they call annual performance plan, APP, such documents would require, because when we measure your performance for the quarter, we'd want to measure it against that the document that you'd have submitted to us. In the absence of that, it becomes a bit difficult. I've looked into your quarterly report. You still present on it. It does have those activities. But in terms of us following on that, it's going to be a bit difficult because we do not have something, you know, tangible. That is, we'll deal with it when it comes to that. But I just wanted to clarify that we could have avoided some of these questions by submitting such documents. I like the way you presented your stretch plan, just to join what my colleagues were saying, because it makes it, you know, easy for a layperson even to understand what you are all about. And I want to say keep it up on that front, because really this is about that, educating us together with the public on the work that you are doing. It's because these types of presentations, they help us to understand your work, and they also help us to help you do your work better. And you can only empower us by presenting in the manner you've presented. You've informed us of your previous challenges and what you were required to do to mitigate some of the challenges that you had before. You had to, for instance, expand in terms of your resources, expand your resources in order to deal with the cases that you have. And members have asked this question, but I just want to ask it in general, to say what exactly did this type of turnaround, how did it impact actually in a general staff establishment or in a general organization. I hope you understand, because moving from the previous stretch plan of the previous medium term, 3 years, to where we are today, and the challenges that you've spoken to, especially around resourcing, additional resourcing, what you've done before and where you are now, what would you say have given change to that? Where did you receive, and how much, for instance, how much, I don't mean in terms of sense, I mean in terms of change from the resources that you had in the previous term and the current term that we're speaking to, how much did you get that would have showed this kind of turnaround that you've spoken to? I hope I'm not confusing you. The institute, is it an institute? The management training, it's not an institute, it's just it's a program, it's a training program. You haven't, for instance, informed us as to where is it? You said it's an internal arrangement thing, kind of an arrangement thing, where the four-week program. I do understand that, but where do these members go to? That's why I talked of an institute, because I know Treasury has an institute, you know, that they have created, and I know DPSA has an institute specifically created for managers, senior managers and managers up to junior management and so forth. And then where do you attend, where do you take these members of your staff to? And I understand the quality of training you need for your specific work, but is it are the current programs running in the government circles not able to meet your requirements as the Competition Commission? And if you were to utilize them, don't you think you'd be saving a lot in terms of your mega resources that you're complaining about? I think the rest of the questions are related to the money. I was a bit confused in terms of what you said. You said you have 187 million that you've requested, and but you only 123 million was approved, not 63 that deferred from what you required. Okay. What was your baseline before? You say you're moving from a zero baseline. Why? Obviously, you're not a new entity. You might be new in a sense that you've been deployed to a new department, but you're moving from which baseline? Can we just understand that so that as we motivate for additional funding, not to say we don't understand the reasons behind that, we do and we support that, but we want to be clear of what we're talking about now. And what has been your year-on-year growth? If you can give us from the previous MTF. Yeah, I'll leave it there. Over to Mr. Rambo.
Thank you very much, Chair. I should, up front, just apologize for whatever documents we didn't submit. We were doing this under the guidance of the EDT and your office, and I'm sorry if we haven't. Just to point out, though, that some of the documents or some of the information you want is information typically included in an annual report. So, for example, you know, employment equity and organograms are there usually. So that's the time we report on our employment equity, for example. So that's kind of going to come out shortly as well. But if there's any other documents we can make available to you, we'd be pleased to do so. And we have a sense already, so we'll prepare some documents for you.
Just to respond on that one, the reason why we want that, you know, we are considering a strategy plan, and it will be important as you motivate it now for additional resources. We have to understand where you are, so that as you report, we will obviously also compare to where you want to move to and whether it is necessary for such, because as Mr. Ntuli has indicated, you know, sometimes there is this call for additional resources, but when you look at the actuals, then you find that clearly there wasn't a need, or there was a need, but you didn't even ask for those resources. So it's for us to determine whether what you're saying and what is in place is in congruence or not.
Chair, I'll take the questions as I've written them down, but some of the questions relate to some, you know, there's more than one question on a similar issue, and I'll try to answer them collectively. The question around amendments to the Competition Act, you know, I wasn't suggesting in this report that we want further amendments. All I was pointing out is that there is a competition amendment bill that is imminent in its kind of coming into being, and we as an organization were preparing ourselves for that eventuality by kind of, you know, looking at what, how we'd implement it and who we need to have relationships with. So, for example, in criminalization with the NPA, we need to begin to think of how we give effect to the market inquiry provisions of those acts. Of the new act, and I think that was the only point made there. There's been a number of questions on our capacity building and management development program, and just to go into that, and as I come up with other questions, if I haven't answered anything, I'll add to this explanation. Is, you know, In the first period that we started off as a competition agency, a lot of our training was the more technical training, you know, what an economist needs to do in analyzing a particular case, or how does a lawyer interpret the law and correct the evidence and make that particular case before a court or before the tribunal in terms of the legal standards, in terms of the current economic theories around the issue. So we do a lot of, we still now, that's a very rapidly changing field, and there's a lot of need for that kind of technical training. We started off by doing a lot of that kind of training. We still continue to do that. So, for example, just yesterday had an international person come, and an international professor from Italy run seminars on particular technical issues related to the economics of competition. We have, even our, in the organization, we have a lot of seminar series. People are given the opportunity to present things to their colleagues and get feedback. There is, I think, you know, I can safely say that in the last 2-3 years, we've built a real culture in the organization of learning, of understanding things deeply. We have a conference on Thursday for competition practitioners presenting papers. There's a lot of learning of those very important technical things that happen. If you're in the competition commission at any one time, there'll be a notice up about what the next event is going to be. So we've done fairly well on that. And we've established the culture of learning in that sense. The management development program, as I pointed out, is that while we have all these really truly bright sparks working for us, good lawyers, good economists, they lack the management experience. They're young people, and as you get promoted in an organization, the higher up you go, the more management responsibilities you take. And we find we were setting these people up to fail if we didn't at the same time give them the skills to be able to manage better. And the kind of management we're talking about is very basic, you know, project management, how to manage a project or a process, and people management, how to supervise people, how to get the best out of people, how to mentor, how to, you know, so those are the two areas. I mean, the project management is designed around a project for us is managing a case from the beginning to the end. And so what we did is about a year and a half ago is we put out a tender this project, the management development program. We got four at least kind of people tendering for it. We selected one company, Resolve, the Resolve Group, and the idea was that they would design this management program to suit it directly to our organization and the problems we were experiencing. So this wasn't abstract training and theory around what project management is, but how do you manage a real case? So we wanted to make that connection. So and we've run the first batch of about 15 people. This program lasts a year. Everybody takes 4 weeks off, scattered throughout the year. We have an outside venue, a training venue, you know, usually a kind of training in a hotel, or not really a hotel, it's a lot of training kind of in venues in the Pretoria area. And they're there intensively for a week. We ensure that the managers give them, this doesn't always work well, but the managers give them time off to concentrate on that. And the idea is that we want to see improvements in precisely one of the questions asked, you know, that we want better cases managed better, cases managed faster, better turnaround times, more thought put into how the process is actually managed to take it to conclusion. We've completed the first lot, and we began, in fact, about a week ago. I went to this little ceremony we had. We handed out certificates to those people who completed, welcomed the next batch of people, which is a new lot of 15, and they will go through the through this process now in this current year. It's a very interesting thing we're doing. I mean, the question as to whether there are other institutes that we could tap onto, they probably are, but we were very, very clear that we were talking about a category of staff. You know, a lot of them have postgraduate degrees. They're all very highly skilled people. They're not like starting off at the bottom. And we really felt strongly that we wanted to design this course for our workplace and not make it an abstract thing. So people will go and, you know, there's a lot of training that occurs where somebody goes and they learn how to write an objective, or they know the flow diagram of a project cycle, but they're not able to apply it to their real life situation that they're in, and we wanted that gap completely closed. It must be practical information that they get. So there were a bunch of questions on that, and if there's anything I left out, we'll talk about that again. There were a number of questions around our budget. I mean, just to say, and on the issue of our savings culture, on the question of the budget, I mean, the most interesting question was about, you know, you can't ask for more money and then have a deficit at the end of the year. I think that is a big problem in government. And in fact, we have historically been victims of that. I'm talking about 3, 4, 5 years ago. That is what happened. We usually always ask for more money than we spend. But clearly what's happened in the Competition Commission over the last 3 or 4 years is that there's been a kind of really exponential growth, and you'll see some of that when I do the quarterly report, of the number of complaints we're getting, the number of, you know, we've become, the more successful, if you like, or the more well-known we've become through the cases that have received publicity, the more work we're getting in, the more people are kind of informing us of either a problem. The other thing that's really boosted our work is when we revise our corporate leniency policy, which I've reported to this committee before, and this is essentially where the person who walks in the door first to tell us of some cartel behavior is immune from prosecution, and that kind of just enables us to get the rest of the cartel very easily and quickly. And it's a very effective thing for us because it's very cost-saving. You save yourself the trouble of undertaking the investigation yourself because you're getting information handed to you, and people are kind of proactively coming to us. So in some instances, we might have not investigated the cases where people are coming to us and telling us what's happening. And between the successes and the CLP, our in-tray is rising rapidly compared to our out-tray. You'll see that in our annual report statistics. How many cases we currently sitting with, and how many are coming in, and how many are going out. And there's more coming in than going out, and in the middle is getting higher and higher. And that is evidently something that's happened in the recent past. I mean, it is clearly. So, you know, there is the danger that we'll ask for more money than we can spend. But I think, you know, our statistics of the cases we have and what kind of pipeline will show you otherwise. Last year, in fact, if we didn't get a last-minute grant from EDD of 15 million rand, we would have overspent. We would have, you know, EDD really averted a huge crisis for us by giving us that last-minute additional money. We would have overspent if we didn't get that money. Yes, 10 million rand, sorry. Last year was 10 million rand from EDD. I mean, those points are taken, and I think that, you know, insofar as people are asking, the chair is asking, well, let's get all your information so we can independently see whether actually this is happening or not. We can provide that, and I think it will be evident, you know, with the information we'll provide. we'll inevitably get back to this topic when you look at our quarterly report. The question around whether our saving culture will affect on our operations, clearly that's not the intention. I mean, the idea is for us to work more efficiently, more effectively, in other words, do more with less resources and money. It's not a kind of trade-off between saving and not doing your activities. I mean, I don't think that was the idea around it. There were some very specific questions around the steel price and banking and chemicals and that. I mean, on the steel issue, I understand the context we have right now. There's a lot of controversy around steel pricing and what's happened with Mittal, ArcelorMittal. Our cases have preceded all of the recent drama. We've been kind of dealing with these cases for like 2, 3, 4 years now, investigating it. It's kind of long been a topic that the Competition Commission has been dealing with. It's an area that's, as is pointed out, completely aligned to government policy. The DTI feels very strongly around its industrial policy objectives. And steel prices, we've aligned to that. We have a number of investigations in the steel case. One significantly because of a complaint made by the Minister of Trade and Industry on tin plate. You know, he made a complaint because around how much it cost to cans because of food cans. Was the issue that kind of led him to make this complaint around tin plate. We have cases being investigated in this area right now. With regard to banking, as people know, we've had a banking inquiry, and the banking inquiry made a number of recommendations that around how we could improve competition in the banking sphere. Banking, as you know, has its own regulator. It has its own regulatory regime that is run by the South African Reserve Bank, who reports the National Treasury. And because it was regulated independently, we've had to work very closely with National Treasury around giving effect to some of the recommendations that came out of our banking inquiry. And the minister, in fact, 3 months ago made announcements, the Minister of Finance, that is, on taking some of our recommendations forward as National Treasury in re-looking at how the banking sector is regulated. So that was part of our advocacy work to get the government, to get National Treasury to kind of re-look at how the banking sector is regulated and what are the competition issues that needs to be taken into account by the banking regulatory regime. And you know, there's a very similar answer to the question around ESCOM. I mean, the principle here is that where there is a sector-specific regulator that's regulating a particular sector, then we must work with that sector-specific regulator to ensure that the way in which they go about regulating is not anti-competitive, so in a number of these instances we don't have jurisdiction in tackling this matter because there's a law, there's legislation passed by Parliament of how that sector will be regulated, and there's an act that governs that, and of course, you know, that's just how it is. We're required in those instances to have a memoranda of understanding with the sector-specific regulator, and if the sector-specific regulator thinks, for example, that our instruments, our laws, are sharper instruments to tackle an issue, then we'll agree between ourselves that we will take up the issue and they will support us and vice versa. I mean, this has happened in quite a big way with ICASA, where we've worked we've come to committees here, like last year on the interconnection fee, where we've given input on how they could go about designing their regulatory regime, and they've deferred to us in some cases. So there's a case against Telkom, for example, right now, before the High Court, where we've got support from sector regulator. So the question around Eskom is, we have a MOU with NERSA, which is the regulator for this area, and we will work together with them, and they will draw on us when the need arises. But we're not proactively dealing with that in our own right. The question around consumer protection, I think that's an important question, because there's clearly a complementarity between what we do and what the consumer protection law does. Well, the consumer protection law protects and advances the rights of individual consumers who have a complaint. We don't do that. We fix whatever is a problem in the market as a whole, and so we don't kind of advance the interests of any particular complainant. You know, there's a big principle in competition law that we advance competition and not competitors. We don't take the side of any particular competitor or any particular customer. We look at the whole market and what is blocking or unblocking competitive behavior and outcomes in that market. So a lot of our complaints are, people come and complain to us. You'll see in our stats, a lot of us, when the complaint comes, it takes a very short time to say, this is not a competition complaint, this is a consumer complaint, it must go to the consumer authority. So a more powerful, well-functioning consumer authority is going to give us the ability to refer these complaints to an organization that can more effectively deal with those kinds of complaints. Mr. Tuli's question on youth unemployment. We certainly not the kind of sharpest policy instrument to be dealing with youth unemployment. We will deal with anti-competitive behavior in a particular market and try to fix that problem. But we're not doing it specifically to improve youth unemployment. That's not the kind of sharp policy objective an institution like us has. When there's the issue of unemployment, so while unemployment in general is an issue we can deal with when we have a merger and a lot of jobs get lost, and we could say, look, you must limit the number of jobs that get lost if we approve this merger, we're not kind of specifically distinguishing between youth unemployment and non-youth unemployment when we're doing that. But with regards to our own internal policies around our graduate trainee program, we every year get at least about 10 graduate trainees. These are people just out of university, no work experience, they're not highly paid, they contracted to us for a year to get some work experience and learn about competition law specifically, and we've found that to be a very, very beneficial program, because of the 10 people that come in, at least half of them often stay on. And this is our way, as I said earlier, of growing our own skilled people in an area of work that doesn't have a lot of expertise in it. There's been a lot of questions around the issue of our resources again. And I've answered most of them, but I do want to point out two things. Is that I think a forum like this probably gets everybody coming and telling you, look, they don't have enough resources. I should point out that my kind of attitude when I first came to the job is that we'll work with what we got. We'll make the best of what we got. But clearly, kind of circumstances have gone beyond that now. We do need more resources, And the only thing I can say in our favor is this is really the first time we're asking this. The strange thing that's occurred is that in previous periods, it was other people, Parliament itself, you know, Thabo Mbeki in a speech, the minister in a speech in Parliament, were saying, we must give the Competition Commission more resources. People were saying this when we weren't asking for more resources. We then went ahead on the basis of all these promises and put together these grand plans, which we're now going to be held accountable to, and with 63 million rand less to implement it. And we did it on these promises, quite frankly. I mean, really, if you look at the history of this, and a lot of people were here, it was other people who were saying, give this organization more money. We weren't asking at the time. All we were doing, we took that seriously insofar as we planned these grand plans, but now it's kind of, there's no follow-through around it. The one point that I should make, and, you know, it's a point that I'm told should never work in our favor, because it creates a perverse incentive. But the one point that should be made is that in the last 2 years, the last two financial periods, we have contributed 7 times more to the fiscal than we've got in terms of money from it. So we're putting more money in than we're getting out if you calculate all our fines that's going in. I'm told that that's never a good reason to ask for more money over, because the perverse incentive is that if you're getting money on the basis of fining, then it'll incentivize us to go and fine everybody left, right, and center, and we'll make mistakes in doing so, and that's why we can't keep the money. Okay? So the money goes straight to the fiscus, and we get it through the NGEF again. I think I've responded to everything, Chair. Oh, the zero-based budgeting. I should just say that that idea was that when we put together, you know, people budget in different ways. So you can just say, well, I spent X amount last year, add 10% for this year's budget. When we do a strategic plan once 3 years, we don't do it like that. We go and say, well, how much will that project cost? How much will that project cost? How much will that cost? That zero-based budgeting is the idea I was introducing, rather than just adding a percentage. And we've done some of that kind of serious work when we kind of do our strategic plan. So, yeah.
Okay. Even if you do that, Mr. Ramburu, I think it would be beneficial to us to understand, just to have an understanding of what you've been planning for. You wanted to come in? Ma'am? Oh, okay. Thank you very much for the responses. Do we have follow-up questions or new questions for clarity? Any input or comments that you'd want to make? Members? Silence means consent. In terms of your new establishment, how many people are you intending to employ this for this current, or have you already started employing for the current financial year?
One of our bigger strategic plans was to expand the organization and to start a new unit called the cartels unit, because a lot of our cases have to do with cartels. We, a long time ago, made representations around how we'd go about expanding it. We've got very nice kind of organograms showing how we'd expand this over time. And two things happened that kind of scuppered that whole process. The one is we didn't get approval of the new organogram, and the second is we didn't get the money. To be fair, a lot of these things were happening in the transition period between DTI and EDD as well, so there were some kind of problems around that. But we firm on this plan. As an organization, we've taken the decision that that is necessary for us to do. It's not like a nice to do, it's a have to do. And we've done other things in the organization to ameliorate the fact that we haven't got the money and the approval. So we've employed some new staff on contact basis that's outside of the organogram, say for a short 1 year period. We've transferred staff, so we've taken. I can't give you that offhand, but can we send that to you? Yeah. Okay. And then we've transferred staff, so there's been a lull in merger activity. It's fallen a little bit, so we've taken some staff from the mergers division and we've put them to the cartels division. And we've interestingly got through the National Treasury, in fact, a grant from DFID. That's the funding agency, the Department for International Development, the UK, which is funding, which will fund, the money is just coming through, which will fund some additional staff for a very short period, not a sustainable thing, you know, getting down the funding in that year.
Okay, thank you. In terms of your intern program, you say half of take 10 youngsters how often?
And once a year.
Once a year. And it means even for this financial year you do have...
We have 12 at the moment.
You have 12 for the current. And do you budget separately or do you use any other fund outside the compensation of employees?
For that activity, we budget for that.
You have a separate
budget for that? For that. Part of our HR budget.
Okay. And the ones that remain with you, obviously for the previous year, you have 5 that have remained from the 10.
I'm not sure if the exact
numbers. I'm taking from what you said.
I'm saying over like a period of about 5-6 years, we've done this.
Okay.
The average number, I'm just kind of, we can give you exact numbers for each one of them.
Okay.
But, yeah.
And you say they help in alleviating the human resource constraints that you might be experiencing. Okay. Members, I don't know whether you do have a follow-up, any other questions. If you feel we have exhausted this strat plan presentation, we can now move on. I can see we still have enough time. We have actually finished 10 minutes before. Can we then thank the commission and request that documents that are outstanding be forwarded to us? If they can be forwarded before next week, if possible, because we are rushing time. We have a lot of backlog to consider. This is not out of our own making, but out of the fact that the department could only a table now. So we are trying to close the gap as a committee, and we'll be trying so for the next 2 weeks. We'll be working very hard to close the backlog. Otherwise, thank you very much for the report, for the plan, and we are going to still go through it with an aim of assisting you get it off the ground. We will be meeting with the department on their quarterly report, and the issues that you've raised, we will be following them up with them. Especially around funding and others. You are aware that, because I did inform you during our meeting early last month, that we will be going on an outreach. We did one of the issues that we have. I'm glad that we are dealing with the issues around the communication and so forth. One of the issues that was raised by the members of the community is that they have a lot to talk to the commission about, but you are not that clearly accessible to them. They noted the fact that you only have your offices around Pretoria, and they would love to have your offices. I know the nature of your work doesn't allow that, but at least if you can go out on, there was a proposal to that regard that you have an outreach at least once or twice a year on your work, so that you can take what they are saying into consideration whenever you do your work. So I think we are then officially passing that we have to still report to the Parliament, but I thought I should give you that so that you also have as one of your priorities. Otherwise, thank you. Members, can we have 5 minutes break before we deal with the next issue, which is the quarterly report? Thank you. We are now dealing with a briefing from the Competition Commission on their quarterly report. You'll realize the challenge from our side is that we do not have your activity plan. But I've also, as I mentioned earlier, that you have included those areas. You have included them in your catalog. It's good. Can you take us through it? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Okay, it gets now a little bit complicated. I must make three remarks before I proceed with this. And that is, firstly, we did send a report of our quarterly report to Parliament, our quarterly report to Parliament that has all the columns and sees what we've done in that time, and that is based entirely on our business plan. We didn't think we needed to send that separately because all the information is the same, but we're happy to do that. So there's a business plan that looks at what you will do in each of the four quarters and what the milestones are. Now, the point that there's three important points I need to make in introducing this. Firstly, that report, if you look at it, if you've taken the trouble to read it, it is a very difficult report to read. And the reason is we produce that report as a management tool, not as an accountability tool. In other words, this is a report that a manager reading will make sense of, oh, I need to do this, or this needs to move next, or this is my milestone. We wrote it for the management of the organization rather than writing it to be a reporting tool for an outside audience like yourself. Okay. So I apologize that it is a difficult, unwieldy, all-over-the-place kind of report if you're not directly in the organization involved in the management of it. But I think also a very significant thing that happened since is that we, in the last audit that we've had, in other words, the audit that's been just finalized for the last financial period, you'd all be pleased to know that we have a clean audit. There's no there's no problems with our audit, except that the Auditor General pointed out in undertaking the audit that the way in which we set our objectives in the in our business plan doesn't always comply to the SMART principles of objective and performance indicator setting. And twinning that now with the fact that we're going to have to use these reports not only for internal management but also for external accountability, We've and with the advice of the Auditor General on how we can be more concise in writing these reports, because remember these reports go to the back of our annual report, and those 100 pages is too many pages taken up at the back of the annual report, and they're not written in a very concise way. We've committed to kind of working with EED in revising the way we have conceived of and devised that business plan to make it more user-friendly to an external audience and to make it a shorter document. And that's something we're currently doing in the organization. The third thing to say about this first quarter is that kind of out of the previous presentation is one of the things we've had to do in this quarter, and we continuously have to do, and it's very frustrating for us, is that in the light of this uncertainty around whether we'll get that additional 60 million or only get 30 million, we've stalled a lot of the nice-to-do activities. Of course, the have-to-do activities we have to do, we stalled them because we were uncertain about whether we would get this money. Once some of these projects, once you start them, they start rolling and they kind of incur costs as you go down the line. So part of our, so you'll see that some of the kind of nice to do activities we haven't begun them because we needed certainty first on the funding situation. This includes, as I pointed out, issues around employing more staff, setting up the cartels unit, kind of agreeing and settling on the structure of the organization, those kinds of things in the uncertainty around funding, they've been stalled a little bit and they haven't kind of gone as far as we would have had we been certain that we had all the resources available. But I think also a very useful place to start this presentation is just to say that the work of the Commission is drawn, you know, unlike, say, a private sector organization or other kind of non-statutory organizations, is first and foremost the work of the Commission is dictated to by the mandate given to it by the Competition Act. And those are the three areas I've described in some detail in the earlier presentation. So the Competition Act says you have to do these things, this is what you set up to do. In a number of instances, it tells us how we must do it, what we must take into account in arriving at decisions, and more importantly, in some instances, it tells us how long we must take. Some of these things are time-bound, so you can only take a limited period of time to approve the merger. And because of that, you know, the pressure for us to do the mandated work is greater than any other work. You know, even, you know, for example, although this didn't occur, but you don't really need an MDP, a management development program. You don't need it because the Act doesn't tell you you must have one. But it's a very important thing to do, and in some ways it's a nice thing, an additional thing to do. We won't get into trouble if we didn't do it, but if we didn't do the stuff that the Competition Act asks us to do, we would be in big trouble because private business would kind of take us to task for not meeting one or other deadline or fulfilling one or other of our statutory functions. So the main place from where our workload comes is the Competition Act. Then in addition to that, we've added strategic priorities, which tells us how we'll go about fulfilling those mandated structures, mandated objectives. And these strategic priorities enable us to do our work better, quicker, faster, more intelligently, higher quality, you know, and you'll see that that's how that's captured in our strategic priorities. It kind of overlays all the mandated work we've got to do. And then, of course, in addition to that, as with any other organization, you need a whole bunch of operational, organizational things that you need to do to maintain the organization and to ensure that it functions properly. This includes our HR, finance, IT, and security functions. This is common to all organizations. And then, very importantly, for a public sector organization, I suppose for all organizations, is the governance issue and our governance objectives and the way the organization is governed is set out by the PFMA, Treasury regulations, and other legislation like health and safety or employment equity, etc. So this is just to tell you what what has gone into our business plan. What has gone into our business plan is all of these things. Okay, all of these four things, what we have to do in terms of the Competition Act, what our strategic priorities are, how we run the organization operationally in terms of the support functions and the governance function. So I'm not going to now follow the format of that fat 100-page document I've given to you, because as a point of that document was written for our managers and not for accountability purposes. I'm summarizing the information here that comes from that report in a slightly different format based on more on this schema that's on the slide right now. Okay, so
can I just find out from members whether are they okay with that? Welcome, Mr. Manamela. Unfortunately, we've dealt with the first part of the meeting. We're now in the second part of it. Are you comfortable with what the commissioner is saying? So that we can then proceed. It's sort of putting us in a bit difficult position, but I want to hear from you if you're comfortable so that he can then continue with the presentation.
Yeah, I am happy to take any questions arising out of the report we submitted to you if I don't cover it in my presentation.
Okay.
But I'm just pointing out that it doesn't mirror, you know, directly.
Directly on what is, yeah. Are we okay? Maybe let me find out from you, Commissioner. What you'll be covering is obviously what you've tabled to us.
Sure.
But you're just summarizing it.
Yes.
I agree. I don't have some kind of a problem with that. But you are saying, because we will be asking questions, but, you know, sometimes the presentation helps in understanding particular areas. So that's why sometimes it's very helpful for you to follow what you submitted to us. That's why I'm asking the members whether they are comfortable with that. Because the presentation is kind of should be a kind of an enabler. So if members are quiet, it means they are comfortable, and let's continue. Members are not sure. You are a bit confused. Are you confused by myself or by what the commissioner is doing? Can you clarify me so that I can direct the meeting? you want to talk? Just a second, Mr. Rambol.
Yeah, Chairperson, I think we are not sure of how is we going to prevent, and that's why we you see us hesitant, because we will say yeah it's right, and at the end we did not we are not happy. So maybe why don't we let him present and then see whether we did understand, and then we take it from there. Thanks.
No, Chair, we take it every document here in front of us is equally important. But now when Commissioner says it was meant for managers, somehow it reduces that importance, and it puts up doubt to say can we interact with the document or not. But I think we'll entertain the document.
I'm getting a sense that the members are saying it's okay to continue, but they will then, in the process of the presentation, they will then come in to indicate whether they are comfortable or not. am I quoting okay? All right, let's give you that opportunity, Mr. Ramburu. We will assess.
Chair, the main reason I'm saying what I'm saying is I'm apologizing for you getting such a difficult and unwieldy document and to just get to read. If you try to read it, it's not easy. But and the reason why it's like that is because it's been written more for our managers to be able to track their work, who have greater insight in reading this than for an external audience. What I'm going to do is I'm going to summarize all that information in a more digestible form in my presentation. That's all the only points I'm making. So, Chairperson,
let's talk to this or Commissioner. I must say we are used to this kind of report. I mean, most of members here are not new, the majority are not new to this. What can be difficult is the fact that we didn't have anything to compare to prior to this. Normally what happens, we get the stress plans with the activity reports and so forth, and then as we get a quarterly report, we then compare. Then we are able to say, in as far as what you presented to us earlier, compared to what you are telling us you have done now, these are the issues that we feel are not going on, okay? Or we're thankful of the fact that you were able to stick to your documents. If there are any variances, we are able to ask questions and get clarity, and where clarity is not clear, actually, your explanation is not clear, we are able to help you to say what do we feel you could do perhaps to us to alleviate certain problems. That is the only difficulty that I'm foreseeing here. But otherwise, I think feel free, because the document is quite is what we were expecting. We were expecting it. And as you said, you will just give a summary. It's appreciated because the document is quite long. And there are areas where we would need clarity going forward. If you don't explain them in your presentation.
Thank you. Okay, so as pointed out earlier, a major area of our work is merger control. We have mergers that are notified to us in terms of the Competition Act. It's compulsory for parties to merge with combined and individual turnovers are above a certain threshold to notify us. Mergers are divided into large, intermediate, and small mergers. All large and intermediate mergers have to be notified, but we could call for a small merger to be notified if we think that's necessary. This slide shows the trends in the number of mergers that have been notified in the last 5 quarters. If you had a longer time series here, you'd see that merger notifications have dropped a little bit since the economic crisis but we still have an appreciable number of mergers that get notified to the Commission. This is just a slide to show you the trends, just some of the kind of hard figures is given in this slide. We've had 56 mergers notified. 45 were finalized in the period and sent to either the tribunal or sent. The parties were told in the case of an intermediate merger. We approved 44 of those 45 mergers and prohibited one. In addition to that, we have a monitoring division that looks at whether mergers get implemented without being notified, and we haven't had any of those prior implementations in this period, but we continue to monitor about 20 mergers where these conditions have been placed on these mergers historically, and they get monitored by this division. Very interesting in this slide is that this is information just released last week. There was a survey done by the Center for European Law and Economics, where they surveyed 60 jurisdictions in the world and rated their merger regimes and how good they are in terms of a whole range of criteria that they set out. And I think very, very significant is out of the 60 countries that were surveyed, South Africa's in the top 10. South Africa came 9 out of those 60 countries. So we are ahead of the UK, we are ahead of the European Union, a lot of European countries and South American and Asian countries. We have a very well-respected merger regime in terms of world standards. In terms of our enforcement activities, these are now the complaints we receive and the cases we proactively initiate. The slide also tells you what the how many cases we've non-referring or referring. By non-referring or referring, I mean when we finish an investigation, to refer it is to send it to the tribunal for adjudication and a final decision. You see, I mean, if you even look to the highest, longer time series here, is that generally the number of kind of complaints we're getting is increasing. But also what is increasing in the green light, in the green bar, is the number so we get a complaint, we can do one of two things. We can say, okay, this is a case we'll now initiate an investigation on, or we can say, look, this is not a competition matter, we're not going to investigate this matter, and we therefore non-refer it at the screening level. So people complain about all sorts of things that have nothing to do with competition law. And so you'll see that a large number in the green line of the cases that we get non-referred at screening. These are not competition matters. We can dispense of them, and a fewer number gets initiated where investigation gets initiated. But even if you look at these numbers, you'll see that, you know, generally the numbers of cases being added in terms of new investigations is higher than the number of cases we're referring that's coming out of our system and going to the tribunal. Okay, what it means is that we, you know, more is coming in than is going out, and our inbox is higher than our outbox. You'll see that's the trend. But the other important thing here is that there's a lot of people are complaining to us on issues that have nothing to do with competition law. Very significant in this slide as well is the relatively high numbers of corporate leniency policy applications we're getting. We're sitting with something about over 90 right now that we're dealing with. So some of the raw numbers here is at the moment, the total number of cases under investigation is 166. So there are 166 cases being investigated. Just in this quarter, we got 63 complaints from the public, and the commissioner initiated another 11 cases. 41 of these cases were, as I said, about two-thirds of them get non-referred at screening, and then a further 8 has got non-referred after we did the investigation and found there wasn't an issue here, so we said, look, we're not going to refer this matter further. In the current period, we've got 23 CLP. In the period under review, that's the first quarter, we've got 23 CLP applications, and we're sitting now with a total of 98 CLP applications that are being considered by the Commission. We undertook two dawn raids and site inspections. The dawn raid was on South African Airways. If you recall, at the time, just prior to the World Cup, there was a raid on South African Airways on the issue of high tickets and collusion around that. And there was a site inspection on a case involving cables. We've also, in 4 cases, issued summons. That's not 4 summons, but in 4 cases, summons were issued to kind of instruct people to give us information which we were not getting through the normal course of our investigation. And 6 complaints this division recommended for referral to the tribunal for further prosecution. We received one exemption application from Sapir, and we finalized one exemption application in relation to the airlines. Okay, then the Sapir is the South African Petroleum Industries Association. Okay, so this slide, previous slide, looks at what's happening under investigation. So the organization investigates, then it sends it to our legal services division that then prepares for the case to be argued before, prepares for the legal proceedings that will occur then before the competition tribunal. And in this period, we've referred two cases for prosecution to the tribunal. Our legal services division are still sitting with 34 cases that they're currently preparing. In other words, where the investigation is complete, but they're preparing these cases for prosecution before the tribunal. Of these 34 cases, 24 of them relate to collusion, and 12 of them relate to abuse of dominance of vertical restraints. We finalized two consent agreements in this period, which I think is significant. We've also got six cases currently before either at a higher court, that is either the Competition Appeal Court, the High Court, or the Supreme Court of Appeal. And currently there are 10 cases in the tribunal that are at various stages of the hearing, of the proceedings in the tribunal process. Just to tell you about a little bit about the prosecution of the cases, the two referrals that we did this, we referred to the tribunal. One of the cases is against CompuTicket, where this is about exclusionary conduct relating to the provision of outsourced ticket distribution services. This has to do essentially where if you are, it's about CompuTicket abusing its dominant position by requiring if you have to sell your tickets through CompuTicket, you can only sell it through CompuTicket and through nobody else, through no other means. So it kind of ties you into them in a way that kind of prevents you from using other channels to distribute your tickets. The other case has to do with Fritz Pinar Cycling. This is about collusion in setting the wholesale and retail prices of bicycles and other accessories related to bicycles. The two consent agreements we've had this period with fines totaling around 20 million rand. One was Keystone Milling. This is a member of a cartel that fixed the selling price of white maize. As we've reported previously, there's a number of cases we've got in the bread value chain, which is the milling and the baking. We've dealt with a lot of bakery cases in the past. We now kind of, what's coming to fruition is the milling cases. And the second consent agreement we've got is against Masana Petroleum Solutions, and they were involved in a cartel involved in selling, in setting the price of bitumen, which is a product that's used to make tar, amongst other things. And they've charged an admin, and they agreed to pay an administrative penalty of 13 million rand. Now, I've put three slides here to just make one very important point. Right? We've got these are slides about the cases in our three priority sectors, right, which are food and agro-processing, construction and infrastructure, and intermediate industrial products. And what you see here is that the bottom line, where it says investigation, hearing, settlement, decision, is the pipeline that a case goes through when it goes through our system. So it comes in, there's an investigation, then there's a hearing, then there could either be a settlement before the hearing could be concluded, or the tribunal can take a decision, and then the case is completed unless a party takes it on appeal, which then adds another leg to it. So that's the kind of pipeline of what happens to the case as it goes through our system. And what's very, very significant here is you see that And then, of course, top-down is the value chain. You know, it's input, production, manufacturing, retailing from you know, what the value chain of these products are. And what is evident here and very clear is that there's a lot of cases we currently investigate. So we started all these investigations in all of these cases. They're all to the left-hand side. I'm just going to show you, this is in food and agro-processing. This is in construction and infrastructure, and, well, we're doing a little bit better here, I suppose, in intermediate industrial products, where there's a lot of settlements, okay? And there's a lot of these matters are at the hearing phase. But I suppose my point made most starkly by the food and agro-processing is a point to remember is that the investigation is something done that is done mostly using our internal resources, the staff working in the organization, and they do the investigation, gather the information. When it begins to get to the next and following stages where an argument has to be made before a court, for example, we have to hire external counsel to represent us. You know, senior counsel in some instances, depending on which, you know, if it goes to an appeal court, for example. And as you go, and whereas the first part of it is very human resource intensive of what the staff we have, as you go along it, the expenditure becomes about hiring external people at commercial rates to fight these cases for you before the different courts. So the point here is that as we move along, and if we don't reach settlement, which is something we're increasingly beginning to do, which saves us a lot of money because then you don't spend all this money on lawyers' fees before the courts, as you go along this pipeline, you begin to incur more and more costs. So when you're seeing all of this investigation now, in a year's time, as they move, all of these cases, if we don't reach settlement, is going to incur a lot of costs going forward. And this is to give you an idea of what's currently happening, what's currently on the plate of the Competition Commission, and to tell you where they are in the different phases, and to make the point that as we move them to the right, we incur more costs. I'm not going to go through this in detail, but this is the kind of detail you will find in that report where people are talking about a particular case. They're referring to these kinds of cases. Okay, in terms of the other area for work, as I said, is advocacy and stakeholder relations. Here, a big output for us is advisory opinions, where a party was not really sure about what, you know, whether a particular section of the Act applies to them or doesn't apply. They're not sure whether they're breaking the law or not, or whether something is a merger or not. They will ask us for an advisory opinion, and we'll give them advice in a formal kind of way, in a formal way. And in this 3-month period, we gave 13 advisory opinions and a further 31 clarifications, which is not such a formal process. We can do this just with an email or over the telephone. But a very, very big and very significant advocacy initiative that we've undertaken in the Commission that began in earnest in this first quarter of this current financial year is a project relating to bid rigging in public procurement. And here, there's a lot of context and history here around how we arrived at this point, but a very significant thing that happened in the recent past for us, by which I mean the last 2 years, is the high number of corporate leniency policy applications we've had from firms that were involved in rigging bids in public procurement. And so it became evident to us that this is a big issue and all of these cases would need to be prosecuted. But also what became obvious is that while we're prosecuting these cases, on the one hand, we need to put into place mechanisms in government to prevent the bid rigging from occurring in the first place. So what we've done is we've worked very, very closely with National Treasury and their public procurement section, the supply chain management section of the National Treasury, and we've looked at how we can kind of revise certain practices and policies so to create a high level of consciousness amongst procurement officers of this phenomenon of bid rigging and what they can do in order to identify it, to detect it, to report it, to prevent it from happening in the first instance. And what it's resulted in is National Treasury has put out a they've put out a practice in terms of the PFMA, saying to all government agencies, this is what bid rigging is, this is what we need to do, and they're now requiring all big projects, people bidding for it, to sign a certificate of independent bid determination where people will commit to saying, I was not involved in any bid rigging or collusive activity intended for this project. Okay, so that's one part of it. And then we've, in addition to that, run a number of different workshops, which actually continued last week, which is outside of the period we're looking at. There were further workshops run with government officials to kind of train them on how to ensure that if a bid rigging doesn't happen and how to implement the certificate of independent bid determination. Okay, and then we're looking in parallel to this is now the preventative side. With all these CLP applications that are coming in, we will have to process them and decide on how we proceed with them in terms of prosecution. We've had, in the normal course of our work, a lot of meetings with various stakeholders on various issues in that period. Significant is EED, where we had to work very closely with them around their putting together their growth path document. We've contributed to that. We've interacted with NERSA, the IEC, the National Agricultural Marketing Council, the Department of Agriculture, the Consumer Union, and the Reserve Bank on various issues. A number of these kind of ongoing discussions we have with them. We've made comments on the post office bill to the Department of Communications, and we've done a fair amount of work that's stalled a little bit now because, but in that period, we've kind of looked at how the point I made earlier is preparation for the amendments to the competition bill. And so we've had discussions with the Economic Development Department of the implications of criminalization, and we've had meetings with the NPA and the SAPS Commercial Crimes Unit on how we would interact with them on the issue of criminalization. In this period, we've also done some very significant international work. I've reported previously that we have observer status at the OECD Competition Committee. There was one meeting of the OECD in the period under review, and we presented papers on bid rigging, procedural fairness, and standard setting. Also in this period, there was the annual conference of the International Competition Network, where we are very active participants. Attendee gave a presentation at one of the plenaries. I chaired one of the sections of this meeting, and people from the tribunal were also involved in the International Competition Network. But far more interesting, I think, is the work we're doing with other African agencies. In this period, we finalized a joint food project that we'd been doing the previous year beyond that, but we finalized that and came up with the final report. This project is a project we're doing together with Zambia and Egypt. So South Africa, Zambia, and Egypt have put together researchers and people working on food issues, on competition issues relating to food. The areas we looked at was edible oils, milling and fertilizer, and this was a kind of capacity building initiative with these other countries where we shared ideas around how one tackles food markets, what research methodologies we use. It was just a kind of sharing experience that I think Zambia and Egypt in particular felt was very useful, because we had done some, we had done more work than they had in kind of tackling issues relating to food markets. We very, very often get people coming over to us to fact-finding missions. We've had in this period a Mauritian competition official seconded to us for 3 months. Mauritius is just setting up their competition authority, and this person came to see how we work and what we do, and kind of plug that back when they went back to Mauritius. And we had competition officials from Namibia who just set up their own competition authority, visiting us for 2 or 3 days, I think, speaking to different parts of the organization and learning on how to kind of put together their own organization, which they're busy doing right now. Just some kind of general statistics to pull out on the communications we've done. There's a lot of work done on communicating internally with staff, news updates, news flashes. We have a staff meeting once a month, the first Friday of every month, which is a kind of where things of common interests are spoken about. And then external communications in that period, we released 6 media releases. We produced one of our competition news publications that summarizes a lot of the cases we're dealing with. From the one monitoring agency we have, and I'm sure these numbers are more than what that monitoring agency was able to monitor, we had 671 print articles and 553 broadcast media articles in that 3 month period. Our website was visited 67,500 times by 17,500 visitors in that 3 month period, which I think is quite good for a website. So, and then just to kind of talk through very briefly what some of the objectives relating to our strategic plan and how they were given effect to in this period, we've kind of, in the knowledge management area, we've incorporated knowledge management into our performance contracts of staff, where they will contribute towards building the knowledge of the organization and using the system. You know, just briefly, the knowledge management system depends quite a lot on what individual staff members put onto the system. So if they don't put it on, it's not any use. So we're going to monitor that, and that's become part of their performance contracts. We're testing the new case management system, and there's been early change management initiatives in some of the divisions to work out how they would begin to use the system more. Under learning and development, we've had in this period, we've introduced coaching and mentoring for both middle and senior management in the organization. So all our senior managers in the organization have been offered coaches to assist them in how to kind of deal with what is clearly a very kind of stressful environment that they work in. We've had a number of internal training capacity building courses. The last part here is just the number of governance meeting structures. The one thing that occurs like clockwork in the Competition Commission is every Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock, the commission meets, and that's where all the big decisions around cases are discussed and taken. That all the decisions emanating from the Competition Act, and we had executive committee meetings that look more at the operational issues. We've got ManCom. We had a workshop with ManCom, which is all our senior managers, and the audit committee met once in that period. Regarding human resources, it was in this period that all staff had their performance assessments and got performance bonuses paid out on the basis of those assessments. This is where the figure of 12 graduate trainees are part of our graduate training program currently. Our staff complement, including graduate chair in these countries, 136. In this period, we made 5 appointments and had 6 resignations. This was also, as you can imagine, a very, very busy period with respect to planning and reporting. This was the period in which our external audit was conducted. It was the first quarter of the current year, which means we kind of tied up everything to the previous financial year. In addition, internal auditors conducted audits on certain sections of the organization, registry, legal services, and office of commissioner. A lot of our planning work went into ensuring alignment to the Economic Development Department, and a lot of the drama I spoke about earlier around motivating for additional funds occurred in this period as well. Then, you know, just to summarize in the end, is the capacity and resource point is made, the uncertainty and budget is made, but there's some very important parts of our implementation plan that are put on hold or not kind of proceeded in as quickly as we possibly could do it because of the uncertainty, and this includes the training, market inquiries, organizational structure, formation of cartel units, and raids are, you know, to undertake a dawn raid is an extremely costly exercise. What is clearly also happening is litigation costs are increasing, where we're spending a lot of money paying lawyers to appear in courts, and we have often little control around how much of time that takes because it depends entirely on the behavior of the parties we're prosecuting. If they decide to take a technical point to the High Court, we are obliged to kind of counter that point, and that's not something you can plan on very clearly in advance. And the point about measuring our impact is a point I've made previously. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Ramboro. Here is the report. Now your time to judge whether that really met your expectations or not. May we interact with this report, members? Dr. Rabi, any other member? Mr. Ntuli. Mr. Ngwenyama has overindulged, I think that's why you are consulting with us just now. Mr. Nanamela. Okay. Thank you, Dr. Rabi. And then Mamlai.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Commissioner, on page 5, you mentioned that the global merger control index, it is.
The slide presentation.
Yes, this one. I think it's on page 5. You say that we're not.
Yes.
And I'd like to sort of, what are the norms that the people use to sort of quantify whether you are 9th or 10th? I'd like to get some more clarity on that, please. And then secondly, you mentioned that cases in the food and agri-processing, but you also mentioned supermarkets. Now, our retail sector is very concentrated. I think if you look at the 4 big or 5 big groups that compete in the retail market, I'd like to sort of get your views on that and whether there are any findings of collusion or any cartel forming. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thanks, Dr. Rabi. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. I would say after the Commissioner has presented the... I find it very difficult how to measure in fact, I'll say after he has presented, I find it not adequate for us to be able to see the problem. The other thing is that, same as Rabi, I wanted to check what is the ideal score. If you just see 5 and you don't know what is the ideal situation, or how much a person is giving, or this one a middle one, or what. And we did not have the index which tells us that from this person, the poor satisfactory, excellent, or what, that's five. And then, but the other thing said is that if you look at the presentation on the screen, you can see the colors there, that this color means that. But now when you look at our, it's all black. You know, it's all black. You can't see whether it's red or green. I mean, if you look at this, the one we have, it doesn't make sense. It's all black. And when you look on the screen, then I'm not sure whether it was supposed to be a colored one. Somehow it changed to be a black and white. In future, maybe it would be better if something is going to be presented like that, then it comes to us with those colors instead of this black and white. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that is a request, not the commission. Ariko must make sure that he makes the colored copies instead of black and white copies in future, so that you can be at par with your presentation. Ma'am Lai?
Thank you, sir.
I'm a little bit lost. When you compare the slideshow presentation with the quarterly report for the management, I think there are huge differences. But leaving that there, I'll come back to that. My first question will be on slide 7 of the presentation, where you refer to the complaints non-referred at screening. I just want to know whether this complaint, this 41, is this the complaint of which came from the community, or is this part, is this 11 part of the 11 from the commission? Is this part of this 41? And this 8 of the non-referral after investigation. What is the problem? Did you experience any problem when you investigate this age, and what are most of the reasons that this was not referred? And the other one is the exemption application finished. The time frame was very short in compared to, if we compare to the normal way of doing things, I should say, because this occurred during the 2010 World Cup, and you could conclude it in that time frame. So if we can do it like that, what is the hiccup of all the other cases that we are handling? And then, Madam Chair, my last one is, maybe I don't understand it so nicely, is in this report for the management, in its executive summary, that paragraph 3, I don't understand. Can the Commissioner please explain what is that? Because you see a surplus there, and you expect that, and it doesn't make sense. With the executive summary of for the managers. So I really don't understand that. Thank you.
Okay, page 91, yes. Member Tessie?
Chairperson, the first one would be just a comment on HR that we encourage the Commission to improve on that. I mean, what you heard earlier on about but it discovered after promotions, it simply says processes are not properly followed. Because once we promoted, there are processes that we follow, like interviews, evaluation, and then performance evaluation. But it's not that bad after your stagnation. And on page 20, under challenges, again we have this measuring impact. I'm not sure if I'm the one confused, because here we have, you know, some audit of the complaints we received, the complaints of attendance, who, I mean, some statements we have received. So I'm not sure why you say it's still a challenge. Not unless you say maybe you didn't reach your, you know, the target you've set yourself. But I don't think really you can say you are not able to measure your impact. For us, we see a lot of progress in whatever you are doing. Maybe the challenge is still there. It's about the impact on the community themselves. As we make all these interventions, how do they benefit? Because the prices are still, you know, eating on their pockets. But I think you are really doing great.
Thanks, Ma'am Sotetse. Yeah. Commissioner, I think the challenge as posed earlier on, I think you can see now the reason why I was saying what I said. I think this the document developed for internal purposes is quite good. I must say it's good, but it's good if you are able to compare. I must say, in terms of what you've given us, the work that you have done so far has proven that you've spent a lot on human resource operation, that is operational funding. But when I look at your expenditure report, it doesn't sort of give me that indication, because you are said to have underspent for the quarter. But unfortunately, I don't have that information that would tell me as to how have you budgeted for the quarter. Because it's only through your report that I can gauge whether you have underspent or overspent. That is the difficulty that one is actually getting from this report, because it doesn't allow us to compare. But obviously, your running costs are too high, should be too high, but they are not. And that is one motivating factor that perhaps to motivate for additional, because we would be saying your staff is spending more time on investigations, let's say on cartel investigations, obviously on S&T, on accommodation, traveling, and so forth. Should be spending, there should be that part in showing us that really you are spending more on that. I just want to find out, in terms of your staff complement, you're saying you've appointed five new people. The five people, and then there are six that have resigned. The new appointees, are they replacements, or are they appointees as per vacancies that were there even before the resignation? In terms of your you remember earlier on you even mentioned that we attended a briefing by one international colleague of yours. I want to know, because in that meeting you indicated that you'll be developing fast-tracking measures in as far as building or construction industry is concerned. I think it would, this is an opportune time perhaps to brief the committee around that, because see the time you said you were going to implement and the time that you are briefing us, I think it's a very good thing. I don't know whether, because that had depended on mostly increase in terms of your staff establishment. You wanted more people for you to be able to implement that. I think it's important that members know about your plans in terms of how are you intending to approach issues related to whether it's tender rigging or bid rigging, or whether it's the collusion in the private sector around the built industry. Or if you don't feel comfortable in that, you must say so, so that we arrange another day where you're going to be briefing the committee around that. We still, I think we will allow that, because I realize that I might have caught you unprepared. You have, you conducted two training workshops on bid rigging, but then you focused on the health department and the Cape Metro. Is it as per the response, or is it a targeted thing from your side? And why did you target only, if it's a targeted approach, why did you target health and the Cape Town Metro? Just to understand that. The last, yeah, the last question perhaps would be similar to the one that Dr. Ravi asked, but in another way, that in a form of a request, that you do, you just go a little bit further in explaining what you mean by that. What does it mean to us as South Africa that we are number 9 out of 50 countries in terms of measure control performance? What does it mean to the country? Because obviously we are new in this committee. We're interacting with them for the first time, with this type of information actually at length for the first time. And going forward, we just want to understand what it means to us. That would be our last, the last question from my side. Obviously, I did not concentrate on the quarterly report. I'll tell you my difficulty. My difficulty is that I would like to compare and be able to say, yes, the Competition Commission has done well for the quarter. Because even in your presentation, you'll realize that you, because of the type of your work, I'm not blaming you, type of your work only allows you to continue with the project perhaps from last year or 3 years or 4 years back. So for you to say, I have concluded, you know, I've started within a quarter and concluded, it won't be a correct reflection. Am I wrong? Am I wrong or right? Because of the nature of your work. So, just also, it will be important that you brief us on those difficulties so that we understand as we look at your work. Because when approaching your work, we're not going to approach it the way we approach any other, for instance, the work of the department, because of the nature. So it is important that you explain to us which part of your work are ongoing, which part of your work would demand immediate output, you know, like a 3 month output or so. The question that was asked by Mem Line, why have you managed within a quarter to finalize the SAA issues. Is it not possible to do others the same way? Or is it something that is not the correct reflection? Maybe you started earlier, you happen to have managed to conclude just before the 2010. You know, it's very important that we understand that so that we are in line with you in terms of understanding. Yes, thank you. You may then respond.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I must apologize again for the documentation and the problems that have been raised around preparing and following, and as I pointed out, that we've also got advice from the Auditor General on how we can change these documents to make them more readable, and there is a pro, and we are kind of addressing this with you right now. On the question of the survey, okay, so there is a full document, unfortunately didn't bring it, that describes the methodology that they've used in giving these scores. Some of the criteria that were used were the kind of consistency of decision making in an organization, the reliability of the organization to take the decision, the turnaround times, how user-friendly the organization is by the private sector lawyers that use it. So there is a set of criteria that they've used, and those are some of that I could remember off the top of my head. But the way to read it is their relative weightings. So it doesn't matter, you know, I think it's important to know the criteria, but it's relative to each other. So you're kind of reading something in terms of weightings relative to each other. They're not a mark out of something, okay? It's just how you read it, read those numbers. I'm happy to make that entire report available to this committee. But I think what it means for the country is that, you know, there's a lot said about how, you know, there's a lot on both sides of the debate around whether South Africa is a business-friendly destination or not. And clearly, you know, a country that has a jacked-up merger evaluation regime that's kind of ninth in the world can't be too bad a destination for business to be operating in. I mean, I think that's a significant thing. It's like we have a merger, and businesses look out for these things. They want to know how easy or difficult can I pass my deal through the relevant authorities in a country, and we are up there with the best in terms of the study, at least. So I think that's an important thing. I'm sorry about the colors. I think it might well be a RICO's fault, but we must choose colors that when you print it, you can distinguish between the black and white as well, you know? Well, okay. I mean, you know, I'm not sure how to respond to the question around this executive. Is this the executive summary?
My apologies. When I went through it, then I understood it
okay.
Better. So leave that one.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. Slide 7. Look at this. Where's slide 7? Okay. The complaints non-referred at screening, these are complaints that come out from the general population, parties, communities, individuals. And one of the things that, you know, a lot of people sometimes at a very knee-jerk level have some problem with their business and say, let's complain to the Competition Commission. We get a lot of those cases. These are disputes people are having over contracts, contractual disputes. You know, these are kind of, some of them are labor issues. Some of them are purely consumer issues. Consumer, I'm not happy with this product. And so we get a lot of complaints that people who have a general right to complain about something, but they're complaining to the wrong people, because in terms we can only do a limited number of things in terms of what our legislation allows us to do. Now, we do, and you know, I'd like us to be held accountable to this, is when we say to somebody, look, we can't help you, we make every effort to direct that person to the correct and appropriate institution that will help them. So, because people have genuine problems, it's just that it's not something the Competition Act deals with. And that's an earlier point made about the importance around the complementarity with our consumer protection laws is well made, because a lot of the complaints that we non-refer must be picked up by the consumer side. Now, the one very, very big unfortunate mistake that people are making is seeing this exemption application that was finalized to the airlines as the same thing as the case regarding high ticket prices during the World Cup. Don't think we've only got one case against South African Airways. Okay, that's the, you know, there are many. I don't think when you see Sasol, we've got one case against them, or Mittal, that there's one case against them. Our cases are made in terms of the market in which the case occurs. So a case is in terms of the market, not in terms of the firm. So Sasol could be involved in the polymer market, making plastics. Sasol could be involved in the fuel market. Sasol could be involved in the gas market. And so those are three different cases against Sasol. That's an easy one to explain. Okay, so the case is defined in terms of the market in which it occurs, and every market has a different combination of players. A case is not defined in terms of the individual firm involved. So with respect to Sasol, we have that case against that we took up during the time of the World Cup around complaints that came from the president's office and elsewhere on high ticket prices. We had a raid against Sasol, and we haven't actually, you know, that case is a case that will still conclude. Cases take a long time to conclude, and I take your point about you needing an understanding of how long that takes. The Act gives us up to a year to conclude a case, and gives us the ability to extend that period through the consent of the complainant. So we have long turnaround times. We don't have turnaround. A short answer to your question: there are very few things. Well, I suppose mergers is the thing where you can come in and within a month, in some instances, and slightly longer, we've got to prove it. But in the instances of these investigations, turnaround times, it's very unlikely you're going to get it all happening within a 3-month period. But to get to this question then, this exemption application regarding the airlines has to do with the code-sharing agreement that airlines have with each other. You know, like Star Alliance is a bunch of different airlines getting together. They're all in separate entities, but they work together as the Star Alliance, and they've given us reasons why we need to exempt them from the collusion provisions of the Act. They're saying, look, this is not really collusion. This has a lot of efficiency benefits if we're able to collaborate with each other like this, and then we will have to kind of specifically say, okay, you have exemption over these particular behaviors, and we've got to be specific around what they're exempted over. Okay? So they're separate cases. Okay? Management reporting. The points around improving HR are well made, and the points around measuring impact have been answered. I think you're absolutely right in terms of administrative indicators. We can tell you, and we keep all this information about how many things come in, how long it takes us. We're good at keeping administrative indicators. In other words, output indicators. But we're talking about measuring outcomes and impact. which is a question you've answered. It's, you know, when is the bread price going to fall is a question people still ask me, and I still really don't know the answer to. But that is an important question, and we need to engage with that question. So we're good at telling you all what's coming through the organization, how many cases, how long it takes, but there's a lot of pressure on us to be responding to that to say what is our actual impact at the end of the day. There's a lot of points about our expenditure and underspending and how what we've budgeted for, and that information will be provided to allow the comparison, I think. Just on the question of the fast track measures, look, with the number of cases we have, we're going to have to think up all kinds of ways of kind of speeding up these cases, because there's going to be a time we'd be completely overwhelmed by the large inbox that we have. And the one initiative we started that the chair is speaking about is to look at how we do this in terms of cases we're getting in the construction industry. And that is work in progress that we will present at some point to this committee, but to assure the chair was come to one of our initial meetings that there's been a substantive advancement in our thinking. We've got a document on the go on how we'll go about doing this plan. And then finally, on the training workshops, on why we chose health and Cape Metro, I must say I'm not entirely sure why we chose Cape Metro.
It's entirely requested by, and the offer is still there. Actually, we look forward to with municipalities.
Okay, so it was demand-driven, but certainly why we chose health, that's clear. We have a long interaction with the Department of Health following from the very, very first, very dramatic rigging case that we prosecuted. If you recall, the thing that got us onto this in the first instance was a case where Adcock Ingram, a Tiger affiliate, together with two other companies, colluded in supplying intravenous strips and related products to the Department of Health. That was a big, very dramatic case. The Department of Health was very embarrassed by it. They've kind of worked with us very closely since then in trying to kind of work through how they can prevent this from happening in future. And to assure everybody that when we've prioritized which departments we're going to work with, which we continued workshops last week, that's outside the period, we've chosen deliberately the big procuring departments. Those departments that procure the most are first on the list to deal with. And of course, one of the bigger procuring departments is the Department of Health. So that's as part of how we've prioritized who to work with first so that the issues seep down. Chair, I think hopefully you've answered most, if not all, of the questions. Oh, I'm not sure about that. Eh?
It does not, sorry, Chair, it does not, the 5 appointees are not in placement of the 6
Yeah.
Just before Mr. Ngwenyama come in, you see, the issue around the bid rigging measure that you, together with National Treasurer, you are putting in place. I think it will be important that you initiate more than, you know, people responding, or perhaps you make it compulsory, because this is a very, very important area of your work. The fact that sometimes, you know, you deal with issues years after they have taken place, you know, it's a concern, because it doesn't encourage, for instance, people to come forth. I think we all know what happened during this 2010 preparation process. A lot of that rigging has taken place both in the private and in the public sector. The 700 odd billions that we've invested in infrastructure, for instance, we don't know how much of that went for genuine, you know, processes, and which one was really a read in that process. We would want to know, so that not know, but we would want you to take precautionary measures by training people, making people understand that it is wrong, it is criminal to enter into such things. And I'm happy that this type of an arrangement has been, you know, has taken place between yourselves and the National Treasury, which then gives us hope that going forward we'll have, as your motto says, or your slogan says, fair and efficient economy for all. And because fair economy is based upon fair practices and competition, you know. And you can only assist, you are the only people so far who can be able to assist us in doing that. And hence you had members willing to help you motivate for more resources so that you are able to do your work even more efficiently. So I think that there are some things wherein you have to force yourself in, especially around workshopping, training and so forth, with the hope of minimizing cases as much as possible. You haven't said much in terms of your work with the NPA, your work with the General Justice. I think there are issues that you need to clarify in relation to the amendment of the current legislation to enable you to function much better, and also enabling the tribunal also to be able to take action where appropriate, and perhaps working together with the law enforcers. I had noted Mr. Ngonyama, and then I'm lying. Is there any other hand? Okay, let me give you that opportunity.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The issue with me is on prostitutions and litigations with regard to cases pending before the CAC, High Court, and FCA. Just to get some view as to what is the flow that is now the incomings in the justice, and what is the outflow from there in terms of getting the turnover of the cases, in your own view, are we having it a very, very slow process? Or is it you are satisfied with it doesn't hamper your work, in other words? And the cases before the tribunal would be the same. I do understand that we'll be getting the feedback maybe later on from the tribunal. The last issue is collaboration with the African agencies. What is your take with regard to our performance as a country relative to other agencies of the continent? And what is your view generally within the continent? Now, it's close to the thin line on the political question in this regard. Because I'm asking it because I'm trying to understand again, and the point that has been raised with regard to being number nine, within the continent, what is our performance and how are we regarded in this regard, and are we the flagship of the continent, to be direct? Are we influencing, are we having any influence with regard to countries that you referred to here, Namibia and Zambia and so on, Mauritius? I see that we have people coming from Mauritius and seconded to us. Just to get that feel. Basically, those are the two questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Chair, one must really appreciate the way the commissioner is responding to questions and the way he's explaining the questions and everything. Really, one must really appreciate it. But one thing that I think the commission must not forget is this complaints non-referred after investigation. It's a lot of time, it's a lot of resources, and it's a wasteful expenditure, I should say. So we must ensure that we educate the public and ensure that they know specifically what to refer to the commission and what not, so that we cannot have this, I should say, that a wasteful expenditure, because an investigation is a lot of money in terms of the competition. Thank you.
Thanks, Ma'am Lai. I think just to indicate on that point, I think that's what I was saying earlier on to them, that the members of the public complained about that. There was a one commissioner who explained why are they not doing that. But I think that our outreach served actually as a, in as far as I'm concerned. Oh, let me say it this way. It actually assisted the commission to see the need, why they need to appear, to really be, to frequent our communities. Because it was clear that they don't understand what type of work you are doing, what type of cases should be reported, what type of cases can be reported. And it's only you who are dealing with these matters that will understand. But other people would not understand. They know there's competition commission, and because they are frustrated of, you know, whatever that is going on in their communities, or if they are business people, how, you know, they are barred from, you know, participating freely in the economy, they will obviously bombard you with those cases that are unnecessary and which in the long run make you waste time, money, and energy into them. So it is important to educate our community, and I think it is there in all our policies that we must emphasize on the issue of education. So we will check on whether you have actually allocated a lot of your attention towards that, and which means that your media section must work hard on your marketing of your product, of your work actually, marketing, and also monitoring how your advocacy is helping in bringing about clarity to the members of the committee. And that should only gauge through the type of cases you receive. And as long as you receive this type of cases, you must know that you haven't done your job. Any other afterthought, Mr. Ngonyama?
It's a general issue in me, Madam Chair. The agents like Competition Commission, having asked all these questions as we usually do, in your mind, is there anything else that you think we as the Portfolio Committee perhaps we can do to enhance your and the work? And yes, we are interrogating, and we actually get clarity with the aim of actually assisting. Is there anything that maybe we're missing out? And I'm just trying to.
Sen Konyama asks very interesting questions. I'm going to try to answer all of them. I mean, I think, you know, the one general point I suppose people are making is that you know, I think there's some things we've got to live with. The litigious nature, say, of businesses who take us on the basis of what we might consider to be silly, stupid technical points or just a strategy that they're using to prolong a hearing or to frustrate us or to deplete all our resources. I mean, those are feelings I often have about the way parties respond to us. But, you know, for our purposes, I can't always kind of, and I often feel that they're doing these things for the wrong reason. But in a country with the constitution that we have and the rights that all people have under the constitution, they have a right to do these things. They might be opportunistic in the way that they go about doing it. I think that's the terrain in which we operate. This kind of legal terrain comes with these kinds of problems. And even though deep inside I would feel something, I've got a kind of, the way I've got to respond publicly to it is just take it seriously and part of the course. Okay, so, I mean, I think that's, I share that, I think, with some of the sentiments here, that there is, it's frustrating for us. You know, I think that we do make attempts to kind of deal with this. I think that if you look at our track record in the recent past, some of the more successful consent agreements that we've reached. In fact, a lot of the recent consent agreements we've reached is where the Commission is speaking directly to business people rather than our lawyers speaking to their lawyers. You know, a lot of the Sasol cases, more recently the cases around Pioneer. So I mean, there is the issue of kind of the legal nature of our work and the terrain within which it occurs and the fact that we've got a kind of, that's how things are, okay? The questions around collaboration with African agencies, I think that we are clearly seen as the flagship kind of competition agency in Africa. We clearly are. A lot of the other competition agencies, and not only the two nations, kind of look towards us for all kinds of support and input and advice. I mean, I happen to be at the opening, the launch of the Namibian Competition Authority. I was one of their keynote speakers. I'm the deputy chair of the African Competition Network, which is a network that's been set up to launch a big organization in Africa. And I'm the only African rep on the International Competition Network Steering Committee. So we are in this position where we also recognize by developed countries as an equal in terms of the work that we do. You know, I mean, so a lot of the European jurisdictions see us as their equal in some way. So we kind of straddle both the developed country standard, and we certainly kind of seen as kind of providing leadership in continent as well. I think the points made about education and kind of trying to inform people better so that we don't get complaints that are not related to our work is well taken. Hopefully I've answered all the questions. Have I left anything out?
You have one to answer.
Oh, sorry. The one question I didn't answer is the question about the very, you can add to it, is, well, what else can a committee like this do to assist us, to be? And No, no, it's very, very important. It's an important question. Anything. I think that, you know, apart from us kind of keeping you abreast in this kind of way, I can't see anything that prevents this kind of committee from independently taking a stance on something, on a competition matter, to expressing its view on, you know, we've had that, for example, at the time that the bread fixing scandal broke, and it was helpful to get then Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry kind of independently. They didn't call us, they didn't ask us anything, but they just expressed their own outrage at something that was occurring. So in general, there's nothing preventing you from doing that. But the one other issue that we can get a lot of help from other sections of government is when one or other of our respondents is a state-owned entity. So we've got cases against Telkom. We've got cases against South African Airways. Why are they giving us such a hard time in the courts? I mean, I think those questions are questions that you could more legitimately ask than we can, because we, in an adversarial situation with them. You know, I mean, I think when they come to report to Parliament, they need to be asked, why are you contesting this case against the competition authorities? I think you have the ability to do that. And I think not only do you have the ability to kind of ask, to comment on a case before the tribunal, but I think you have the ability to independently summons people to your committee to provide an explanation. And I take this cue from what the communications portfolio committee did last year, you know, where when there was a problem around interconnection fees, not only did they call ICASA to explain, but they called everybody and said, explain to us, what are you doing? You know, I think you do have the powers to do that, as long as they're kind of done in a disciplined, kind of independent way, and they don't kind of, you know, there's no cross-contamination of our processes where, you know, some legal person would use that against one of us with some legal argument going forward. Those are my suggestions, but I'm sure Tendi has more, or do you?
Actually, there are two, but
thanks, Chase. Just really in addition, I think we've got to accept that in a situation like ours, where there are sectors where there is endemic catalyzation, abuse of dominance and the like, that this is more than just a Competition Commission problem. Even by international standards, we're picking up that the volume of our cases, particularly cartels, is very unusual. And I think that, all levels of all sectors in society, including Parliament, do have a role in stamping that out, in expressing the outrage, as Sean points out. I think we can throw a lot of money into litigating these cases individually, but I don't think that we are going to get the desired effect if businesses see this as an issue between them and the Commission. I think it needs to be much bigger than that. The last thing I wanted to raise is, we've raised before that there's also a big challenge of coordination within government, and I think a portfolio committee like this that is able to work with agencies such as the IDC and ourselves, I think you could be demanding more of this coordination from the reports that you see and the like in areas where you feel we should be making the biggest impact. We've said before that, for example, if we think there is lack of competition in areas such as milling or baking, we can't necessarily go and say to another government department, we think you should be sponsoring people. We can try and do that through advocacy. But I think there's a lot of added weight that could come from a portfolio committee such as this expressing a view on that.
Thank you very much. I think your points are taken by the committee that we should be assisting you. We will do so. But also we'll do so guarding against what you said, because that has been the limitation. We don't want to find ourselves now calling people and people telling us, no, you can't deal with that matter because it's under, you know, investigation, or it's before the law, you know, all those legal things. We do not want to be seen also interfering on you know, the work where you have sole jurisdiction. It's our intention to help, but where we feel we must come in, we will. And where we feel we must support you, we will. Where we have clarity, we will. Where we don't have clarity, we'll make sure that we have clarity, whether it's through you or through other means. But the committee has to agree on which areas do we deal with. And obviously, committee members' activeness in the committee will also assist, because that's when members demand that we do something, that we can do it. Commissioners, thank you very much. Let's use this opportunity to thank you for coming and also for responding on availing documents. I just don't feel that on the second part we have really achieved our objectives for the meeting, mainly because of those inadequacies in the availing or availability of documentation. We have to ensure that we close that gap so that for the purposes of reporting, we don't want to make the work of our secretary a bit difficult in terms of reporting, because that has a lot with the reputation of the committee. So we don't want to sacrifice that. It is important that we get, you know, reports. That will provide same information as others do. We can't have reports from other sectors being like this and the other way around. If we report on a quarterly basis, it must be a similar approach and everything. So I kind of think that outside what is written here, we have not really achieved what we needed to, because the quarterly report is very important so that you assess you and you are able to say yes. Because we cannot just assess you through your annual report, because it will really rob us of time to assist you and also of acquainting ourselves with the necessary information. The commission has tried very much to do what they're supposed to be doing, and you know, because we have requested that you present the quarterly report when you were not yet prepared to do that, although the law demanded that you submit such a report. But the challenge, I think, is around submission of the annual strategic plan. And we hope that the department going forward and yourself will improve on that, so that we have everything where it's supposed to be. I think for now, we will just leave it there, but ensure that the next quarter reporting will follow, you know, the timelines as dictated by the law, especially by the PFMA, because that is our
the document that is governing all of us in terms of timelines and so forth, and as per the requirements of the Office of Parliament. Really thank you very much for the responses that you've given and the advice that you've gave, because it's only through this interaction that we can empower and grow in our work. The meeting is adjourned. Before I adjourn, sorry, colleagues. I just want to correct something. I think we'll be meeting at 15:30. The same venue, yes. The same venue. I think the mistake I made earlier on that we are not going to the panel. We are. But make sure that 15:30 we are here, whether the panel is over or not, because that's what we applied for. Can we be here 15:30 sharp? Thank you. Enjoy your lunch.